We are back. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back to the show, or welcome to it. 7:13 here on a Wednesday morning. We'll call it a midweek Wednesday morning, even though for most people, Friday is the kickoff to the Easter weekend. Good Friday holiday. So it truly, I guess, is midweek. If you did not get a chance, you missed the brightest moon of the year, the supermoon last night. It was incredible. Hit its peak at 10:35 last night if you were outside looking up in the sky. But now it's gone. You missed it. You'll have to wait for another year. All right.
My wife announced at 8 p.m., that's it, I'm going to bed. She shut her down.
At 8?
At 8. She said, that's it. So I got the young one to bed because he's got a little bit of a later bedtime now. And then we decided to watch two episodes of Ozark. So completely missed this gigantic moon. So we are now through episode 4.
Okay. All right.
And the next time she saw a super moon, she rolled over and saw you. About 4 a.m.
No. I'm well here by that time. Maybe about 3.
That's troubling. That is very, very troubling. All right. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're going to talk to Pierre Maguire 1 hour from now. We'll speak to him about the comments from Gary Bettman yesterday. The great Bettman said, hey, listen, maybe by the end of April, we'll have some timelines at which we can make some decisions about a return potentially of hockey. For the first time, I think, raised the possibility that, hey, as far as the regular season game goes, that might not be a possibility we play those games. So for Gary Bettman, who likes to put a positive spin or a business spin on pretty much everything to do with the National Hockey League, for him to raise even the possibility that those games might not be played was a bit of an eye-opener for me. So we'll get the thoughts of Pierre Maguire coming up after 8.
Yeah, no, I agree. And trying to kind of look at that, you thought, hey, you cart all 31 teams back and play the end of the regular season. I don't think so. Do I think there's an expanded playoff format, and especially it pertains to the East with the Islanders and the Rangers? Would we see some type of a play? And I think there's possibilities in all of it. But if you want to create any excitement, to take a month or whatever it is to finish off your regular season,
yeah,
I think it would be a complete waste of time. Go right to the playoffs and do your best to get whatever market and whatever fan interest and TV time, whatever you can do to claw back probably August and September.
Is there any way they could come, you know, and I know a lot of players have been asked about this and, you know, varying responses. Connor McDavid for sure was against it, about just going, you know, maybe having some kind of training camp, but no exhibition. Like, you're going right into the playoffs. Is there any scenario where, I mean, you know, we're everything's on the table right now. Is there a scenario that's doable where you go, you know what, you just first game you're going to play is going to be game one of the playoffs?
Yeah, you know what, I think anything is on the table. The only part for the National Hockey League, not that they wouldn't be looking at the product itself and guys take care, I guess it would be the length of the training camp and then just making sure guys would not get injured. Now, in the case of Calgary and Edmonton, the logical part would be you'd play a home-and-home exhibition, but do you really want to do that as you're about to play each other in the playoffs? So
right.
I think there'd be things to discuss. Inter-squad games never quite do it. Now, because your farm team and all these teams actually have a bunch of players, there's some things that you could do to get yourself ready. I think it'd probably the bigger issue, at least for me, I think those players worry more about the quality of the play. I think it's what's the length of the training camp. Like, how much time do you realistically? Because I know camps are short, but that's after most guys are home skating for a month.
Right.
So I think you're going to need a couple of weeks here to get fine-tuned and whether you want to throw in a game or two.
Yeah, and that is a huge part and maybe an overlooked part of all of this, as you said. When players show up for training camp, first of all, they've trained all summer.
Yeah.
But they've also been skating for most of the month, or at least some of the month of August. In this case, facilities are closed.
Yeah.
Guys aren't skating. They're doing their best in some cases to work out, and some have elaborate home gyms and some have makeshift things that they're trying to get done, but nobody's skating right now. Mm-hmm. So that part of it is until these facilities open at some point, that's the kind of overlooked aspect of a return to play.
Yeah, and silver lining or the positive is that almost all the teams are going to be healthy, right? For a lot of guys that were banged up or guys that had major surgery, and this would be why if you're a Sens fan, you don't want the regular season to be played. Who knows with San Jose, who they might cart back and finish the season and end up winning a few hockey games. So get rid of that. But to teams that had lengthy injuries, and we brought up the name Guentzel, like the Guentzels of the world for Pittsburgh, and also to all this stuff, like just how you'd handle the salary cap. Because Pittsburgh, when they went out and made the trade with Minnesota, factored in the fact that Guentzel was going to be done for the rest of the season, right? Now, how do I put the roster back intact, and how do you end up handling the salary cap? Or since it's the playoffs, hey, there is no salary cap. I think it was LA years ago that did that, right? Held out guys until right. the end of the regular season, then popped them back on the roster.
All right, so much more on that with Pierre McGuire coming up after 8. It's 7:18. All right, time for our daily visit to this day in sports history. Do we have our jaunty music that we can accompany that, please? And thank you to today, of course, being the 8th day of April. On this day, if you're old enough to remember, or you were a fan of the team, the Montreal Expos played their first ever game on this day in 1969. Rusty Staub and the Expos took on Tom Seaver and the New York Mets. The game was in New York, so this was not the first game played on Canadian soil, but the first game played by the Expos. Did they win or lose that first game?
I'll go they lost, but I have no idea.
They won.
Oh, they did. Okay.
By a score.
You didn't let me pick. I was going to say win.
What year was the Miracle Mets?
That was the Miracle Mets. That really? Was the okay. end of my story. Okay. The Expos beat the Mets in the very first game in team history by a score of 10-9 in 1969. That would be the year that the New York Mets would eventually go on to win the World Series, be dubbed the Miracle Mets, in part because since they had been around since 1961, they had never even had a winning season before. So it was their first winning season, and they won the World Series over the Baltimore Orioles. That Orioles team, managed by Earl Weaver, had that unbelievable starting pitching staff, was considered to be one of the greatest teams in Major League Baseball history, and the so-called Miracle Mets beat them in the World Series 4-1.
Yeah, that would have been the prime of Jim Palmer playing at Old Memorial Stadium. Also, as it relates to if you grew up in that area, well, they lost a couple of teams in New York, but the Yankees to the Mets. What was the, and I hate to ask this on air because I do have Google and I'm not Googling right now, when did the Jets win the Super Bowl? Because I always think of the Jets in relation to the Giants as the same as the Mets to the Yankees, and that was such a big deal just because everything in New York was the old football Giants, but that had to be in around the same time,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's Joe Namath, right?
Yeah,
Broadway Joe, and that was either 1969 or 1970. Okay, it was whether it was Super Bowl III or Super Bowl IV.
Yeah.
One of those two.
And people always rave in Montreal about Jerry Park, right? How cool that was to see games there. And
that's next week's This Day in History. The first game, April 14th, was the first game at Jerry Park. All right, speaking of baseball, we'll stay there. In 1974, baseball history was made as Hank Aaron hits his 715th career home run, breaking Babe Ruth's record.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world.
That, of course, was Vin Scully broadcasting from inside a cave from 1874.
Oh, not quite sure that came out the way that it did, but there is the call. And Vin Scully, of all people, of course, the legendary Los Angeles Dodgers announcer, had the great pleasure of announcing, and that was it's an incredible clip as you watch it because Hank Aaron is rounding the bases. Fans are running onto the field, kind of mobbing him. But there was a lot of, at that time, and well, there still is today, there's a lot of racism. And Hank Aaron has spoken a lot about the fact that he was about to break Babe Ruth's record, the legendary Babe Ruth's record. He took a lot of flack and a lot of heat. From people who are not happy to see him do that.
Did I hear Vin Scully say in right field, is that Billy Buckner that's playing right field in that clip, or is that a different name?
It was a home run to left, I know that.
Oh, to left, I'm sorry. Yeah. But I thought that was the name he says in the clip, so I guess Billy, as a better athlete, was not playing first base.
Well, that's before the legs gave out.
Oh, yeah, sure. The reason he'd be there.
Yeah. In 1990, Nick Faldo beat Raymond Floyd in a playoff to win his second straight Masters golf tournament. Of course, he went on to win 3 green jackets. He also won in 96. That was the Greg Norman meltdown. Nick Faldo is the guy that actually won that one as well. But on this day in 1990, he won the Masters. In 1994, Michael Jordan made his professional baseball debut for the AA Birmingham something or others, ends up going hitless on the game.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Masters, in 2001, Tiger Woods wins the Masters for the second time, and this is why it's special.
A streak that started at Pebble Beach. What a place to start some kind of new configuration of a slam started.
There it is, as grand as it gets.
What a way to cap it off. Perfect speed, perfect line.
And Tiger has his slam.
There it is. It became known as the Tiger Slam. Now, it didn't all happen in the same calendar year, but Tiger Woods became the first golfer ever to hold all four trophies. He had won the 2000 U.S. Open, the 2000 Open Championship, the 2000 PGA Championship, and then won the 2001 Masters on this date.
Yeah, and he'll also be the first person to ever hold the trophy for 19 months, so that makes him even more special.
There you go. Sticking with the Masters, more recent Masters on this day in 2012, Bubba Watson, on the second hole of the playoff, won the Masters over South African Louis Oosthuizen. You may not remember him putting out and winning. What you may remember, though, is this shot from the trees.
With a bit of adrenaline, you might get 190. Yeah, this is 155.
Did it hook? Oh, what a shot!
Look at it. Snap hooking on the green. And incredible. Absolutely incredible. As we say in Britain, brilliant.
There you go. There's Nick Faldo, speaking of which, on the call right there. So that is, to give you the visual, he is so far into the woods that he, when they called it a snap hook, he hit it about 90 degrees. 90 degrees to the right and put it on the green and two-putted from there to clinch the green jacket. An incredible shot by Bubba Watson to clinch that Masters Championship, his first.
The golfers right there, the announcers, to the crowd, to everything else. I do not have a visual, cannot remember the play, but
sounds pretty good. It was, when you see it, basically the opening is straight across, and the green is over to the right.
Yeah.
So he's got to hook it, he's got to bend it incredibly.
Is Bubba a lefty?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, that makes
exactly
sense. Okay.
All right, born on this day in history, John Havlicek, 1940, basketball Hall of Famer with the Celtics, eight-time champion, born on this day in 1940. In 1954, speaking of the Expos, the late Gary Carter was born on this day in 1954. Of course, future Expo and New York Met. Kind of tying it all together.
Yeah, I think any of us growing up in the 80s, that was, along with Tim Raines and Andre Dawson and a number of others, your favorite player, the Kid. And I think he was one of the first people that got the perm trending in Canada.
Yeah.
I still remember him having curtain that bad boy out
in
the 80s for the Expo.
So Gary Carter was, of all those, and there were some incredible players on those Expo teams, he was your favorite?
I think at that time it would have been Gary Carter. He or Tim Raines, I think that was. But there were so many, to Tim Wallach, to
I got to say the Hawk. I got to say
Hawk,
Dawson.
Yeah, yeah. No, they were loaded in trying to get. And also to Dave Van Horn and Duke Snyder calling the games. Like, the familiarity with the broadcast and the fact it was national and the coverage they got. No, that brings back some great memories.
Born on this day in 1961, Mark Clayton, 84 career touchdown catches, most of them with the Miami Dolphins, most of them from Dan Marino, became part of the Marx Brothers because his cohort in crime on the other side of the field. Anybody remember who the other Mark was?
No.
Mark Duper.
Okay.
With Mark Duper and Mark Clayton.
The Super Duper.
Yeah, the Marx Brothers.
Who were the Smurfs then? Was that the Redskins?
That was the Redskins, was Gary Clark, and I'm trying to remember who, Art Monk, I think, was part of them.
Had the Hogs and the Smurfs.
Yeah, there you go. And born on this day in 1964, Jim Catfish Hunter, Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher with the A's and the Yankees. 224 career wins, which doesn't seem like a whole heck of a lot, but how about this run he had from 1971 to 1975? Four of the 5 years were with the Oakland A's, and the fifth and final season was with the Yankees. He had season win totals of 21, 21, 21, 25, and 23.
Wow.
Five consecutive 21 seasons for Jim Catfish Hunter. Had the great mustache.
Yeah, neat how that's one of the standards. Hey, Hammer, I know you're a bigger baseball guy, but the 20 win mark for pitchers still feels like it has some incredible relevance. Well, even more now because guys don't finish games. But that was...
Exactly.
Denny McClain hold the record for most wins in a season?
I had to look her up.
I'll go with that.
Yeah, he was always famous for that and being arrested.
But how many 20 game winners did we have last year? if any. And usually right now it's
one or two.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Hockey birthdays pretty light, got to say, on this day. With and all due respect to Rudy Balcers, Sens prospect, turns 23 today. Coming off a pretty decent third pro year. Spent most of it down in Belleville, but played 15 games with the Sens. Is an RFA. Would you say when hockey, quote, returns to normal, so let's say next season, are you penning or penciling in Rudy Balcers with the Ottawa Senators?
Oh, no, I pen him right now. I'm still, to be honest with you, when I watch him and I know his point totals in Belleville were decent, still trying to figure out exactly what he is at the NHL level. But I think there'll be a trend to move some of these guys along. And this is kind of the neat part of following the Erik Karlsson trade, from how good Norris has turned into to the pick to what's going to happen to Turney. DeMello's already been flipped out for a third-round pick. I guess the tentacles of this trade will be following for years. But no, I would pen him in for next year.
If you are celebrating a birthday today on this April the 8th, you also share it with Rudy Balcers. JT Compher of the Colorado Avalanche turns 25. Pretty good player, but, skates in relative anonymity. And now let's go to a little bit of trivia. Here we go. Highest point getter in NHL history, born on this day. And as I said, this is a pretty light day.
Okay.
But at least we're talking about a guy who's still active in the NHL.
Still active. Ooh.
Here
okay.
we go. All right.
I got a chance.
So I will bleed out the clues for you guys and the good listeners to follow along. When you guys think you know, say I got it, write it down, and then we will review to see if you have the correct answer. You should be able to get this one, though. He turns 27 today. Still active, as I said, in the NHL. Was chosen in the fourth round, 112th overall in the 2014 draft. Was picked by the Nashville Predators. Has had two 30-plus goal seasons with the Preds, including a career-high 34 goals last season. Had just 15 goals this year in 57 games. Nobody?
No, I'm drawing a blank.
Is Swedish.
Still with the Preds? Is he still with the Predators?
Still with the Predators. I'm out of clues. I couldn't give you guys any more clues.
Okay.
You don't have it?
No. I'm drawing a blank because I kept thinking towards Forsberg, but he was drafted by the Caps. It's a fellow that was deemed to be the most underrated player in the league for a number of years.
Yes, apparently very underrated because you can't even remember his name. Victor Arvidsson would be the name you're looking for right there. 117 goals in 335 career games and signed to one of, and he had a down year this year. And I'm going to ask Pierre about that because I was looking at his numbers. Nashville struggled to score, period. Yeah.
Who took the hit in the outdoor game?
He did miss some games this year. So
that was because of the hitting against Dallas,
was
right?
Was it? Okay, yeah.
That was where he got the elbow and the concussion.
He has one of the better contracts in terms of in relation to production in the NHL. He signed a 7-year, $30 million extension with Nashville in 2017 that has four more years to go on it at $4.25 million per year. He signed that after his first 30-goal season, first of two 30-goal years. I just say that because it's such a good contract. And if you think of the Ottawa Senators, right, and listen, I don't want to pile on Colin White, and it may work out for Colin White, but that long-term extension that he signed, that was, 6 years and $4.75 million. And he wasn't coming off a 30-goal year. That was all based on what they projected him to become, which, as we saw this year, wasn't anywhere close. But, that Victor Arvidsson contract is unbelievable for Nashville.
No, and you see where some of the guys are ahead of it. As you say, they've already accomplished it. The Sens, kind of that risk-reward. Worked in the back in the day with Karlsson and Turris. Didn't work with the Cowans and Greening. And you also look at Nashville, though, and David Poile, so good with contracts. But then, you're sitting there and all that money. You turn around and give Johansson the 8x8. Well, that's not bad enough. You give Turris 6x6. And if you want to make it even worse, let's cut in old Dutchie, who's buying his Airbnb, might as well live in it. You cart him in at 7x8, some of the worst spending of money. And they have locked themselves up with an annual hit of $22 million between players that are, first of all, trending in the wrong direction.
Right.
But from a production standpoint, the way they're built down the middle, that has just sucked the life out of that franchise.
All right. Happy birthday to Victor Arvidsson and to you. If you're celebrating today, we'll take a break, 7:32. When we come back, more on baseball's idea of return to play in this baseball biosphere they're talking about down in Arizona. Is it really doable? We're going to chat more about that and, of course, much more throughout the course of the morning. As we roll on here, it is a Wednesday morning. Hope you're having a good start to it. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. saying everything's on the table. Decisions regarding maybe a return to play to become sometime perhaps later on in April or maybe into May. But everything's still on the table at this point, according to Gary Bettman. So we'll talk to Pierre about all of that and the hockey news, including the Leafs signing yesterday of another player out of the Continental Hockey League, Mr. Barabanov, who Pierre would have seen play at the Olympics. And, of course, we're awaiting word of the much-rumored signing of Artem Zub, defenseman, right-shot defenseman by the Ottawa Senators. Has been widely talked about, the fact that the Leafs have signed this guy, and the Sens are apparently, according to Darren Dreger, as much as, well, the rumors had gone back, what, two, three months ago?
Yeah.
That they were in on this guy, and within the past 2 or 3 weeks, it's like, look, it's pretty much a done deal. But the Leafs have gone ahead and announced their signing, but the Sens, if indeed it's going to happen, have not announced it yet. So it's a bit of a curiosity to me.
Yeah, it is. Hey, do you have a contract on the books? Technically, it's not a contract until it's filed, but the agent Milstein, who represents a lot of Russian players, including Mr. Zaitsev, be a great sign for the Sens. What's also interesting about old Barabanov, when you look up his stats, what we're going to see is this is a different trend, right? Where when you go back to 5, 8 years ago, the only players that were playing in the National Hockey League that were Russian-born were stars. There were no more role players. There was the odd kind of, you know, maybe second-pairing defenseman. Everybody else had gone home. And when you look at his stats line for what he did in St. Petersburg, to me this is a shift both in that you're accepting those players in the bottom six of your lineup, but that a lot of them just want to get out of Russia. So I think we're going to see a different trend here on a lot more Russians heading back to North America.
All right, so more on that with Pierre McGuire coming up after 8. We'll talk some football with Henry Burris. He will join us after 9 o'clock. The CFL announcing yesterday, no great surprise, that they are now postponing the start of the season until sometime after July 1st. That will be the very earliest. Even that timeline would appear to be pretty dubious at this point. But again, they're following, well, in some cases, the city of Calgary's already said, look, they said last week, we're not going to allow anything with crowds, and that would include professional sports until July 1st. So really, the CFL's hands were tied as far as this were concerned. But they said they're following the what the public health officials are saying.
Yeah.
Let alone the fact that half of the teams are made up of American players who can't cross into Canada anyway. So there are a number of issues at play with the Canadian Football League. We played a clip from Dave Naylor from CFL TSN Insider last hour talking about, you know, these other sports. I'll say the bigger North American professional sports, they can maybe get by television money. You know, is a huge part of the money they bring in. In some cases in the NFL, they don't have to sell a ticket and the teams make money. In some of the other cases in basketball or whatever, the vast majority of the revenues are through broadcast rights. In hockey, it's important to sell tickets.
Yeah.
But the broadcast rights are worth a fair percentage. In the CFL, and he's seen the books, I mean, there's three publicly owned teams. He said between 35 and 50% of a CFL team's revenue comes in tickets to fans.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about a return to play but no fans in the stands for the CFL, that becomes a huge issue.
Yeah, it does. Now, you'll have to sit down and economically decide, do you play a season or half a season where look at your revenue to keep your product going and not have fans, or do you just say, hey, you pack it in for a year? That would be a big decision, and each of the league is certainly faced with a little different pressure point when it comes to that.
The Canadian Grand Prix announced yesterday it was postponing the race in Montreal, normally held in early June, until sometime later on in the year. Again, if we ever get to a place where there is a sign off and things can go ahead, is there going to be like one day in the calendar from which there is things return to quote unquote normal, in which there won't be some kind of marquee event going on? It's going to be incredible.
It will, and you've touched on, and the big question is the confidence of society. Will this be a celebration? Will it be like, you know what, I don't care, I feel confident, I'm going to get back out, big crowds? And when you touch on a weekend like that in Montreal, well, the economics of the world right now, who couldn't use that? But I think to Calgary in the middle of July, the Calgary Stampede, like we're talking mega events here, right? The economics, and if you had the ability in what is in a terrible economy to relaunch it, And I have to think that has to be a little bit of the hope for Calgary, is that, hey, if we could ever pull this back off, doesn't feel like it. Here in Ottawa, could you pull off a Blues Fest? But again, the economic, like the weekends, that race weekend, it's millions and millions of dollars for the Montreal economy.
Yep. Text just came in, raised a great point. We brought it up throughout the last month since this all came into play. Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question for you, guys. Who's going to be able to afford to buy tickets to these games?
Oh, for sure.
It's a great question.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, and that would be the next phase of, if you're the CFL or you're any league, if you're the National Hockey League, would you open up the door and say, hey, $10 tickets too, right? I mean, this pressure point of what we see when it comes to playoffs in the past, and one of the franchises that never seems to put the fan first is Jeremy Jacobs of the Boston Bruins, where, you know what, you just look at this and wonder how they'll react. They're the best team in the National Hockey League. No, hey, there's going to be a lot of, and if there's a fine balance for every sport, of wanting to turn off fans that have just said, listen, I've been unemployed for 3 or 4 months. Now you're turning around as a longtime season ticket holder. You're going to try to gouge me on the price of tickets. See you later. And so teams are really going to have to balance that.
Yeah, there's going to be some very interesting discussions that will be held, sure, at a league level, but also at a team level behind closed doors, because no two situations are going to be the same. No two sports are going to be the same, and no two situations within a given sport are going to be the same. The economics in Ottawa are completely different than the economics in New York, are completely different than the economics in Dallas.
Very much,
right?
So
you've got to have a good read on your own market and where you are at your own market.
Well, and when it comes to the corporate side of it, now the American mentality, and understand with the National Football League, because of the draft, and they had said it before Trump met with them on Saturday, but there's a bit of a feel now, and I'm not saying they're using it to exploit it, but they're almost feeling like, you know what, we're doing this for the good of the country. Also, when you get to playing again, okay, from an economic standpoint, how many corporations are going to have dollars to spend? And when it also comes to, and this has always hurt Ottawa, hey, there's lots of teams out there, lots of corporations are going to say, you know what, the first thing we're getting rid of are all these tickets that we're buying for all these different sporting events. Like, come on, like, we're trying to actually pay our employees. And more importantly, we're trying to pay the bonuses for all of our overpaid bosses up top. So that will come before we'll go see the Yankees game.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time yesterday, and there was a lot of debate among sports fans about this plan by Major League Baseball, which would appear to be kind of the first time a somewhat credible plan have been put together, although there are some are saying it's just not doable.
Yeah.
But this idea of creating it's been termed a biosphere down in Arizona to play Major League Baseball games, have a season playing in Grapefruit League or minor league parks, college stadiums, and at the one Major League Baseball stadium in Phoenix where the Arizona Diamondbacks play. This whole idea of players being kind of hothoused in hotels and essentially either living at the hotel or playing baseball games, and maybe for months at a time. Nolan Arenado of the Colorado Rockies, one of the very best players in Major League Baseball, was asked about it yesterday. He said, if it's safe, I'm in. But it will have to go to a vote of the players if and when it is going to happen. Here's Jeff Passan with more on baseball's biosphere plan.
Well, the idea is that in order to protect both the health of the players, coaches, managers, and other staff who are going to be there, as well as the public, you are going to insulate everybody involved in this plan from contact with the outside world. Now, that seems like a crazy thing to have to do. And to tell 1,000-plus players, Ravi, that you're not going to be anywhere aside from the hotel and the ballpark, are they really going to abide by that? That's a question only that the players and the people involved can answer. And one that, if this gets past the players voting yes for it, is going to be at the forefront of people's minds.
All right. So that is, the comments of Jeff Passan, who is the guy that broke the story on ESPN with, and we'll see. I mean, various other people have said, look, the timelines appear to be maybe the biggest issue. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's doable. But this idea of, hey, starting a 2 to 3 week training camp as soon as next month, sometime in the month of May, and playing games in June, that's a very aggressive timeline, given the fact, as we said, part of this whole plan is the availability, widespread availability of more tests. And I know that, tests are being, there's more and more test kits available. But it's not going to be a case where, hey, test kits are being kept away from the general public so that, baseball players can be tested every day and can play games. I mean, that's not part of it. This is going to be where there is, almost an overabundance of tests. And also, excuse me, the ability to not only test every single day, potentially, but getting results right away as well. Yeah. You know, there's been talk about technology perhaps existing where you could test a player or anybody and have a result back within 15 minutes or an hour or whatever. So you could, again, cycle these guys through every single day. Everybody takes a test. Okay, he's good. And if you do find somebody that somehow, some way, even though they're living within this bubble, has somehow contracted the virus, you can remove them from the herd and still have everything else go ahead as per, quote, normal.
Yeah, and what they talked about is a city within a city, and the chances of that and everybody staying that way. You've got outside workers coming in, going to have to house them. There's going to be drivers. There's going to be food and beverage. So, no, it's a lot. Now, I also, and we talk about the CFL, baseball to me right now in the United States is America's pastime. Don't think for a minute, and that was part of the conversation, was trying to be relevant of coming back and being able to kind of grab a hold of the sports. Because they asked on the overnight show, on your show, percentage of talk about different sports, and hey, we're certainly hockey-centric, but as far as national news, they said probably 70% NFL, probably 20% NBA, and then you can slice up, and they're probably not even talking about college sports because they're just talking about the pros. Baseball's in a pretty desperate time, and I would not minimize, not that they're going to do anything crazy, and also to this is also Scott Boras, who doesn't care about anything but money. A big part of this stuff is being floated out by him.
Yeah, and he's, of course, the high-powered agent who had clients sign for more than $1 billion
in
the
offseason. Yeah, only gets paid, get about 5% of that billion. So, yeah,
he's got a lot of money at stake in all this. Do you think there's any advantage whatsoever to the first sport that's back? Did they get, because they're working with more racetrack, they're, you know, top of mind for fans? Is that any advantage? I mean, it's, as you said, I mean, it will be, it's about safety at the end of the day, but are the various sports racing as quickly as they can to try to be the first in?
Yeah. Now you could discuss the part of, and I'd say that I'll go with the NHL. Not to rush, but would I be worried if I'm the NHL and I come back after the NBA and the NFL? Because from a corporate standpoint and fan standpoint, the allocation of funds. But as far as actual relevance of the sport, this is where I think MMA is in a great spot, because they look at, and they're one of those sports, they're very popular. And if they're willing to go out and do it, it's also because people love the sport and they want something. Do I think you'll attract that many more baseball fans? I think in the short term, but the second that the other sports come back from a TV standpoint, I think you're gone. But the sports all have to be balancing with their sponsors and their partners to all of their season ticket holders. Like if you're in a market, and I'll go with Denver just today. If Denver comes back all of a sudden and I've got the Nuggets and the Avs in the playoffs, like think about that economically. Like right there, to try to sell both of those teams in one market. Celtics to Bruins. So, there'll be some conversation. But to your point, no, I don't think it's any real big deal unless you grab a hold of it for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, if there is I think you raise a good point, maybe it's not so much from a fan interest point of view that it's important. It's from a sponsor dollar point of view, right?
Time,
in the various markets. Denver's a great example, right? They've got teams in all the sports. If you've got the Avalanche, and the Nuggets, both with good chances to potentially win championships. And you got the Rockies, who had a good year last year, but, you know, starting off a truncated season of whatever length, what interest is... Now, they're not going to be playing in that market, potentially, but you know what I mean? The interest level in the Rockies, where's that going to be?
Yeah, and the other thing baseball has to be careful of because of its model is that if I do come up with this, okay, that's fine. By the time I come back in August, and if the NBA and the NHL have started and we're close to college football and the NFL, when you cart back that team that's 20-60 and doesn't have a chance to go anywhere, what do you think the chances are? Now, baseball's nice because you can be outside, but I'll tell you what, there is nothing better than going to watch hockey than you can win. I remember when Florida first came in, you'd be scouting. We'd walk out after a game and it's just beautiful. You're like, oh my God, like how nice is this? Like when the Sens, and I wasn't here in 07, wasn't that a blast in the middle of June being at a hockey game and coming out and being like I don't think anybody was complaining that it was too warm outside.
No, indeed. You're absolutely right on that. So while we kind of debate, we spend a lot of time talking about professional sports, college sports, the NCAA in particular, I mean, that is an incredible moneymaker. And the question of when and if college sports should and resume is a major question mark as well. Now, there is no college sports played in the summer because the students are supposed to be off.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean, and in particular, we're talking about football, that they aren't training. And Mike Gundy is the coach of Oklahoma State University, the football coach. You may remember the name, and you certainly remember the clip. We'll get to that in just a second. But this is Mike Gundy, and football is huge. Henry Burris knows this. In the state of Oklahoma, a college football Saturday afternoon, there's nothing bigger, and the amount of money that it generates. Well, here's Mike Gundy when asked yesterday in a conference call talking about, and this is him saying he thinks that the student athletes should be returning to campus for off-season workouts or whatever starting on the 1st of May.
The majority of the people in this building who are healthy, and certainly the 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are healthy, the so-called medical people that are saying the herd of healthy people that have the antibodies maybe built up that can fight this, we all need to go back to work.
There you go. The so-called medical people who say that we got to get back to work. So that is the mentality of a Southern-based school head football coach talking about the fact that, hey, we're young. You know, he's looking past the fact that, listen, this virus affects everyone. You know, certainly is having a devastating effect on older people, but we've seen it right across the board, unfortunately, where people have passed away in any age group. But he's saying, hey, I got healthy football players.
Yeah.
I want to bring them all back and get them all out there, and we'll see what happens. But they should be okay.
Yeah, no, and I understand politically incorrect in what he's saying, because you're right. But if you are, and if you've been to a college campus in the U.S. in the summertime, used to hold our summer camps there with the Caps at the University of Maryland, we'd stay in a dorm. There was nobody on the campus. If you wanted to, and you're using the testing portion of, if you wanted to truly control an environment and you brought the football players back onto campus, kept them in a dorm area, had them training, I think there's a possibility, but it also just seems very short-sighted, right? Like it really does. Now, to the economics of this, and I said it last week, the other part, and this will be the part, and people get all upset about college football and the coaches and all the money that they make. Hey, these college football programs, they fund 80 to 90% of the other scholarship athletes on campus. So the trickle-down effect of the economics to the school, to the cities, also to a lot of other student athletes that may be out of scholarships.
Yeah. By the way, Mike Gundy saying that yesterday morning on that conference call was quickly followed by the conference itself that Oklahoma State plays in, saying nobody's getting back together anytime soon, fella. Now, I mentioned the fact that Mike Gundy is maybe a name that's not familiar to you, but certainly Mike Gundy, and we're going to take you back to 2007, uttered one of the classic sports quotes of all time in trying to defend the honor of his quarterback.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage, attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
There you go. Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. Now, to my knowledge, he's still a man. He's no longer 40, by the way. He's 53 now, because that was from 2007 right there.
Yeah, and it is shocking. And I don't want to ever for a second say his Canadians were perfect and every single Canadian is following the rules right now. But it is when we hear the governor of Georgia, when you hear some of these comments come out of the United States, you realize either they're saying this for consumption of fans or they're completely ignorant. And I'll probably go with the latter.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, yeah, is he bringing it up for normalcy, or is he bringing it up for selfish reasons? Is he just thinking of himself and the fact he wants to get back out, he wants to cash paychecks himself, or is he thinking about other people and trying to bring something in terms of entertainment? I think this is totally on a selfish way.
Well, listen, you don't have to go any further than, and I don't want to cast aspersions to anybody that has, you know, deep religious beliefs, but some of the people being interviewed that are leaving church services, right? And last Sunday, and it was not just Southern plays, not just in Louisiana. I saw a woman in Ohio, right? I'm covered in Jesus's blood. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like there are a lot of people who either think this is a hoax, think this is made up, think this is being overblown. There are some Canadian people who feel that way, but certainly in the United States. I mean, Donald Trump has put enough doubt into enough people's minds where it certainly is open to question, where you get the reactions that we hear from people, where a lot of us are kind of shaking our heads going, dude, Do people really truly believe that? Yeah, yeah. Some of them do.
No, for sure. And a lot of the churches are not willing to close. And how big of a weekend is this with Easter Sunday? And also, you know what, Hammer? A lot of that is, this is what the president wants to hear, right? He probably got a call or a text from old Donald saying, that's the American way. Hey, you want to be kept down here. Like, that's a bit of the, that's the mandate coming out of the White House, is we got to rise up and get back to normal.
All right, thoughts on any of that? Always welcome. Text us, 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. Whenever you want to contact us as well, phone lines are open at 750-1200. We'll take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. And when we come back to hockey, Gary Bettman speaks. We'll talk to Pierre McGuire, get his reaction to what the tiny perfect commissioner had to say, and the rest of the hockey news when we return here on TSN 1200.